The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
All my dreams, I've had enough of these annoying and distracting schemes. I'll choose my friends, because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strong Rider on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. And that's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
Yeah, I'm singing, and I'm a-playing, and I'm writing, and I'm a-learning. And that's what I do. That's how I roll here at Strong Rider on the radio. Welcome to the show. My name is Dean Olson. Today we get to feature part two of a great conversation I had with musician Ben Bailey. He is a jazz drummer, been in this business a long time, but now he has a debut CD called A Bird in the Hand. For information on how to get it, because you can get it at iTunes and CD Baby and all those places, but just go to www.benbaileymusic.com, and that way you get to know him and his music. And, of course, you're going to hear him right now on Strong Rider on the radio. So here you go, part two, and we're just going to pick it up right where we left off. So see you on the other side.
Well, on a show like mine, I talked to a lot of songwriters. Now, in your case, what I'd want to be curious about is how your journey has, you know, the path that you took. You obviously have stayed focused on your music, but then you have to support yourself once you moved out. I'm sure you had to hold down a job for all that time. How does that, I mean, this is very normal. A lot of people do that. How has it been trying to balance the two? You know, you work your job, then you try to get gigs or they come your way, and that can be tiring. It's like working two jobs, you know?
Yeah, it's like you're working three jobs when you have when you have an album out.
But, oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, I've been very fortunate to do things that I enjoy doing in the daytime, and I get to work with businesses, and I also get to play. And, you know, you take, as a drummer, you take a lot of different kinds of gigs, church gigs and club gigs, and I'm starting to do more what I want to be doing more recently, but it is a journey. And I just try to have fun with it. I realize that, it's a very tough industry. So I keep my goals lined up, and I always tell people, especially people coming out of school, kick up some dust. It's not all about the PR and the marketing.
Uh-huh.
It's about being productive and creating. And I like running multiple projects and multiple things at one time, and really, but also to continue practicing and to continue studying. You know, music is very humbling, and jazz in particular. And I have, just like you'd have a golf coach, I have a drumming coach that I get with, and the music coach.
So when you say studying, are you studying drumming? Are you studying music in general, or anything related to that?
Well, I study the pantry when I'm hungry, but I really study the styles and the musical, the phrasing. Listening to a lot of different musicians, not just drummers, piano players, and not overthinking it. This music is for people to feel good and dance to and have a good time and listen to.
Sure.
And just really think about the kind of things I'm doing. And it's good to talk with people or coaches about, you know, what I heard and what they heard. And so we'll go and analyze a drummer, a musician, and and we'll have our comments on that and opinions. And then there's technical things. You know, I guess it's the 10,000 hours of practice, right?
Right.
And I learned a lot of that discipline. I was at Berklee College of Music in Boston, and, you know, spent several hours a day practicing and trying to practice smart and not just, you know, just practicing for repetition. But there's a lot to it.
Yeah, that's really good. I did play this for my wife, and then she had an appreciation, too. She really, you're talking about dancing and just and swinging to it. That's what she was doing. I said, what do you think? And she was digging it quite a bit. I wanted to pay that compliment through her. But we both really enjoyed it. It's not a long album. There's 8 tracks. I'm trying to mince words because I was going to say, you know, if you have like an album like Kind of Blue with Miles Davis or something, like, it goes on for a while, but it's each track is great. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But this one just sort of, time just sort of passes and you're enjoying it. I go, it's over with. Let's start it again.
Oh, that's great. I really appreciate that. And you know what's interesting, and I never expected this, a lot of my friends are playing it in the car, and their 4 or 5 year olds are really digging it, and children really seem to like to hear the horns and the big band sound. So
it's
been a lot of fun to watch to hear stories about people's kids really enjoy. You don't have to have all this in-depth college degree to appreciate music, and so I'm glad that I'm able to reach a different audience.
That's true. Yeah, it's for listening, and that's important. But I don't know. Do you feel that the drummer is underappreciated? I mean, he's probably one of the more important elements in the whole project, whether it's rock or jazz or Latin. You know, you got to keep the time and sets the mood. You know,
that's right. And you know, we all have a role, and you know, the songwriter has a very important role, the bass player, the drummer, you know, and we have to understand our role. In the case of the record, my role was, this was my record, and I'm leading the ensemble and then featured, but I still have a role to make everyone else feel good about the solos and the improvisation and the stories that they create. You know, it's a very, almost a spiritual thing when they're creating their storylines, and you don't want to get in the way when someone's telling a story, but you want to enhance that, and that's really what we do. And you know, my role as the drummer, you know, you can think of Mel Lewis, the great drummer Mel Lewis, and Thad Jones talks about the band sits on top of him, and he holds the band up, and so he supports the band instead of pulling along like a train where you're pulling the band. It's more of a supporting from up underneath, and that's the way I approach the drums. I'm not trying to pull the musicians along, but really to provide a comfortable space for them to tell the story.
Yeah, sometimes it's great when you have a I mean, you mentioned Buddy Rich a little while back. I mean, he was a driving force. It seems like he was pulling everybody or pushing everybody. You know, he had a reputation for being a tyrant in his band, but you know, he wanted results every time he was doing a show.
And, Buddy's a wonderful musician, and was a wonderful father and husband too. I've heard some wonderful stories about Buddy, that he is one of our leaders in the music world, in the jazz world. And of course, he's a great drummer, but he's a musician first. And you know, Buddy rehearsed the band and conducted the band. He didn't read music, but he had a memory where he could hear a piece played all the way down, and then he would be able to. They had what they would do. My understanding is that a drummer who read would read the rehearsal on one song, and come up and one or two songs, and then come up and play it for memory. But brilliant mind and brilliant facility. He's one of a kind, and you know, his real gift is to offer that. He's a driving force. He drives the band, but he knows how to improvise, and he knows how to play jazz.
I appreciate you getting in the weeds there a little bit with some of this, because, you look at a big band album and you go, what is there to talk about a big band? I mean, there it is. You're listening to it and enjoying it, but what could there be to learn? But I'm always fascinated to hear how the musicians get along, and you had Duffy Jackson producing you. I'm sure it was... I was told by other producers that I've interviewed that the producer of a record or, you know, a project like this, it's kind of like having a movie director. He sets the tone, he tells everybody where to stand, and, you know, things like that. Is that how it worked with you guys?
Yes, you know, you can think of someone like Duffy, similar to a CEO in a company. You know, they're defining the vision and the mission and, you know, the strategy of how this thing is going to, you know, the overall goal and the objective. And Duffy did that, and he had a vision, and I had a vision. And, you know, with his experience, and he really helped bring it together, and I delivered on that strategy, or I hope that was my goal, to deliver on that strategy. So that's what we did, and you know, so that's his real role, and he provides that environment and that leadership. So he was really in a leadership role on this project.
Yeah. Mentioned a few things. You mentioned that you went to school in Berklee College in Boston, and that you worked over in Nashville. But you're not from either one of those places. Tell the people where you hail from.
Yeah, I'm actually from Atlanta, Georgia, and in the East South here. And you know, I've traveled around the. Had the opportunity to travel around the world. I lived in Basel, Switzerland, for a few years, in London, and
holy cow!
I played music in New York City. Freelanced in New York City, and. But I make my home in Atlanta now, and still manage to travel and get out to California any chance I can. I'll be in San Diego in January.
Wow. Atlanta, I've heard, is one of the four places they tell you it's a good place to set up roots and, you know, for the recording industry. Is that kind of the case with you? A lot of studios and places around there to work?
Well, Atlanta now is big in the movie industry. And,
is it?
Just in the last five years or so, there's been a lot of movies being filmed here. The studio, I'm not in the studio circles as much, and some of that work has become more MIDI-based in individual studios.
Yeah.
But the music scene here and the R&B and the hip-hop scene is a huge boost to our economy. In Atlanta, and also the jazz scene is alive and kicking in Atlanta and on the East Coast in general.
Yeah, the hip hop is exploding all the time. I hear it.
Absolutely,
I see it a lot out here. You mentioned your father. What was his musical background? What did he play, and how far did he go with his musical career?
Yeah, well, so my dad is a singer, and he's a baritone singer.
Wow,
and. He was on the Ed Sullivan Show back in the day in the 50s, but he's
Man,
the church
geez.
Choir, and he's been a big influence on my appreciation for music. And
wow.
He you know, has exposed me to a lot of classical music. And then on my mother's side, my grandfather owned a classical radio station out in San Antonio. And so there was a lot of records around the house from that radio station.
Yeah,
but Dad certainly a big influence on my playing. He's also a classical guitarist and folk guitarist.
Wow!
And you know, Dad came up at a time he did not do it for a living, but he's always had music, and he's always been a part of musicals. He's an actor as well, and has done a lot of local community theater.
Great.
But it's been a big influence on me.
Well, you've done well to carry that on. I mean, that's with your grandfather and your dad and anybody else in your family, I'm sure. That's a gift that they passed to you, and then you're running with it.
Oh,
I mean, you got to recognize that gift in yourself. That's some people don't do that so well.
And my sister also, she's an actress, and so we have fun around the house. There's never dull moments around the Bailey household.
With the Bailey household. Yeah, I like having the CD and seeing the Bailey name all over it. I see there's a track called Bailey's and Coffee. Coincidence?
Well, our songwriter there was Marcus Lewis.
Uh-huh.
And, Marcus is a great arranger and trombonist, and we commissioned that piece. It's what we call a rhythm change. It's based on a rhythm changes form, and there's a composition called Buddy and Buddy, and it sounds similar to that if you're a jazz fan. But
okay.
It's an upbeat sort of, we call it quarter note equals about 200 on the metronome, and it's just a swinging kind of rhythm changes tune with some great soloing on there.
Wow, God bless you. I am illiterate in. I'm like one of those Paul McCartney types where I didn't read a note. And
you can hear music. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I play by ear, and I guess that's restrictive. That my role is to concentrate on the emotion and the quality of music. But that's how I operate.
You know, going back to talking about our role, you know, music is a very emotional thing when we're performing, and we have to. But we do have a role to play for our audience, and it's a balancing act.
I agree.
Of not over-emoting where it gets in the way of the story that you're trying to tell.
Yeah.
But I think that's great that you're songwriting and songwriting for people that are very meaningful for you. And I don't write music, but I'd like to start writing music and learning about that. And
that's a good,
my next journey.
Yeah, you're always learning. I'd love to follow your journey and see how this turns out. But I'm glad that you... You can tell that you're on the right track. I mean, this is your first CD. Did you even think that you'd make one at this point in your life? I mean, you went all this time.
Yeah, I never contemplated recording an album, and I certainly never contemplated having an album hit the charts.
That's really awesome. Yeah, I love it. I wish
a lot of fun.
I wish I was there to go through this with you, but I kind of am. So I'm glad to watch you. On your the genesis of this, just making a name for yourself. You know, I hope it becomes a household name sooner or later.
Oh, I appreciate that. And this won't be my last project. You know, I want to take a little time to reflect back on it, but I certainly enjoyed the process and the learnings from it. I'm self-released on this record, and you know, who knows what's next? You know, in this day and age, it's the independent artist now is. You know, as a big piece of the market,
and
that's what we're doing right at the moment.
You might have come at the right time. You know, some might not have been your time in the '90s or something like that. You know, this is a good time to be doing it. Record industry is kind of weird these days.
Yeah.
You never know where it's actually going. So
that's right.
How'd you end up funding an album like this? I'm always curious how somebody gets a project like this together. It sounds expensive when you listen to it.
Well, it is, and you know, it's a passion, right? And my role was I really wanted to try to carry on the legacy of these great musicians that I've always been a fan of, and so it did take quite a few years to actually finish the actual recording was done very quickly. It's pulling together funding and you know, doing the kind of thing, you know, working hard and saving and putting it out there. And these are projects where, you know, in the jazz, it's very difficult to, very few people break even on a recording, right?
Right. It's not commercially viable, a lot of people say.
That's right. And you know, there's all kinds of streams of revenue, I think, that you can explore with any product. But my goal here is to, I want the piece of to try to capture a little moment in time,
mm-hmm.
and my legacy would be that, and then to try to carry on the tradition and maybe explore new possibilities and the sound and recording my personality.
I'm glad we worked our way around to the recording of the project, because that was one thing. I'm glad that you're doing it in a live setting. That's, I don't know how rare that is these days, but I have an early David Benoit album, and right there in the notes, it's saying this was all recorded in one take in the room. No second takes, no overdubbing. Exactly what you were telling me about yours. I think that's important. I don't know. Maybe some people care about that. Maybe some people don't. But so
well, a lot of the studios will have different isolation booths, and the drummer will go into a drum booth. And in this scenario, we're all in a large room with several microphones to recreate the sound that you would have heard in the early 50s and the late 40s, and then even into the 60s when they were doing recordings. So we try our best to approach that and the mics that were used.
Uh-huh.
And based on our budget that we had, that's what we came up with.
Was the room set up specifically already to record, with baffling on the walls and pads for under your drum kit and things like that, or did they have to sort of fit it?
Well, we had no baffling or sound insulation or soundproofing at all on the session. It's all done in a live room with a very high ceiling.
Okay.
And, but the way his mic placement, he has room mics and overhead mics, captured some of the room sound, and then some close miking on the soloists.
Natural reverb, probably didn't have to do much tweaking at all to get a nice natural sound from you guys.
Well, and the other piece of this is the guitar player, did not go direct. It was a microphone on the guitar right into the instrument, so no amplification. And the bass player went direct right into the engineer's machine there, mixing board.
Yeah, I've heard that that's okay. Yeah, with the guitar, that's probably the best way to do it if you wanted that live sound. Like you said, the configuration on a stage, a 60s Las Vegas club or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I was just, I'm not super big into the sound, but, the technical side of it. But I am one of these analytical perfectionist types.
Yeah.
And these things just jump out every once in a while and say, wow, I wonder how you get along in a room and you're all tight there. You see these things in a movie and it seems like, oh, well, it's so easy. Everybody just set their instruments up and started playing. And if there's a vocalist, they're right there in the next room and it's over within in 2 hours. But isn't that kind of how you did it?
Well, there's so much to think about that your listeners may not know, in that, you're trying to pull all these pieces together on a low budget, and I'm having to think about, does everyone have the arrangement? What does the sound sounding like? Is this the right tempo? All these things are going through your mind, and you're trying to record.
Yeah.
you're basically running, wearing multiple hats at the same time, and I'm hoping for the best. So I was actually surprised with the sound. After I was expecting a different sound. I'm pleased with what we came up with. But it's interesting. There's just a lot going on, a lot of things to manage at the same time. You're really, really multitasking, but the role is to really make the music swing and for people to feel that energy that you're creating.
So, kind of a closing statement on your part. This new CD, A Bird in the Hand by Ben Bailey and the Nashville Big Band.
Yes.
I'm making sure I got that correct. A Duffy Jackson production, as it says here on the CD. What's the one thing that you would hope for when somebody picks this thing up, buys it, downloads it off iTunes or one of those providers? When they're listening to it, what do you hope that they get out of it?
Well, and you know, like you mentioned, it is out there on iTunes and on BenBaileyMusic.com, and I hope people will preview it and take a listen to it. I just want this is not an overly serious project. I want you to have fun listening to this music, and if it makes you dance, that's what we're trying to put your dancing shoes on. And there's a ballad in there as well, and there's a Latin kind of feel, but for some, it's background music, and others will analyze it. And so we want people to make this music their own and however they listen to it. But it is a lot of fun to do, and I'm very fortunate to have had the honor to record this.
I hope everybody listening to it will enjoy it as much as you must have had fun recording the whole thing and doing the project. We did here in the house.
That's always great to hear that. And, you know, it's also something fun to hear live. And we've had some great audiences lately at the CD release party. You know, we had 250 or so crammed into a jazz club, and everybody had a great time.
Ben, I tell you what, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I mean that, to have you on my program. You aren't a songwriter by your definition. You're a musician, but I've learned a lot of, inspiring stuff. At least that's what I derived from the interview. So I hope that you will agree to come back on the show a little bit later on down the line and see how this whole project has been progressing, especially if you're going to do another one.
Well, Dean, I really appreciate it. And it's a lot of fun to talk to you and your knowledge of songwriting. And I'm learning a lot. And, you know, I've enjoyed, you know, as a drummer and a musician and a jazz, particularly a jazz musician, we tell our stories. So it's a different story, but it's still a story that we tell with all those elements. And so I've enjoyed talking tonight, and I hope everyone will get a chance to take a listen to A Bird in the Hand when they get a chance to.
You bet. You keep plugging that thing, Ben Bailey, A Bird in the Hand, and the Nashville Big Band. I always say that because who made up that name, Nashville Big Band? This is you, right?
That's right. Well, the Nashville Big Band is really a group of Nashville all-star studio musicians, and some of them are in Nashville Jazz Orchestra.
Yeah.
But this is the Nashville Big Band, we call it, for this record.
Yeah, it's better than saying a bunch of musicians that we assembled in Nashville for this.
That's right.
Ben Bailey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, Dean, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, pretty good conversation about some music and some drumming and some, boy, he really promotes that CD, and he really should. He has something he can be really proud of. But we're not finished, okay? Part 3 is on the horizon, and we'll talk some more with Ben Bailey. It's actually some bonus footage. We'll get to hear 3 tracks from his album, and he'll give some commentary, and we'll wrap up the year. It's a Ben Bailey Christmas. Well, sort of. Anyway, you know, that would make a cool stocking stuffer for somebody's Christmas. Hey, what a great idea. If you're looking to do that, go to BenBaileyMusic.com, and you can be sure to find all the information you need on Ben Bailey and his music. Until part 3 comes, have a most excellent weekend, and keep warm in the winter with a song in your heart. This is Dean Olson for Strongrider on the radio, saying put your best pen forward and be a strong writer. I really appreciate you listening to the show, and please come back next week, and we'll do it again. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Strong Writer on the radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the Amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.